How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Dress, the History of Fashion, is a production of Dress Media. With over 8 billion people in the world, we all have one thing in common. Every day, we all get dressed.
Welcome to Dressed, the History of Fashion, a podcast that explores the who, what, when of why we wear. We are fashion historians and your hosts, Cassidy Zachary
and April Callahan.
Dress listeners, welcome. It is our now annual holiday gift giving party, Tis the Season, 5th edition.
Yes. And this is where Cassidy and I exchange fantasy gifts from throughout fashion history. And as we've been doing this the last few years, it's grown into its like own entity where now we also pick out our fantasy outfits. And this year we're actually bringing you a new aspect. We are bringing our fantasy foods, which we will be bringing to the quote unquote party.
Yes, and we always have so much fun with this episode. And actually, this year, this is now our last episode of season 7. Can you believe it, April?
We're not going anywhere, guys. We're just going to be on hiatus for, for a few weeks, taking a break around the holidays. Because I said this last week, the show's twice a week. This is a ton of work. So we need a little break.
Yes. And in the meantime, we will, of course, be re-airing some of our favorite past episodes from over 500 past episodes of the show. And then we'll be taking a little break on this hiatus, but we are working on bringing you our now newly launched open for registration fashion history course. The 1950s yes. Golden Age of Haute Couture is now open for registration.
Yeah, and you can register for that, as many of you already have, a few dozen of you already have, at dressedhistory.com. And also, too, we just want to mention that if you would like to gift this class to someone else for the holidays, we can make that happen too. Shoot us an email about that, or go ahead and register for the class and then shoot us an email at hello@dressedhistory.com and just say, hey, I purchased this, but I would like this to go to X, Y, and Z, and we'll take care of everything from there.
Yeah. And we'll even send you a little nice PDF gift card if you want to share that as well.
Yep.
All right, April. I am so excited to step into the annual Dressed holiday party. And I am dying to know what you are wearing.
Oh, this year I'm actually going to be wearing, at the time it was a coat, but I'm going to be wearing it as a dress this year. And it is from 1937. It is a coat by Madeleine Vionnet. It is in the collection of the National Gallery of Victoria in Melbourne, the NGV. And it is all black. It's made from black cotton and wool, and it has these, as you can, this is the 1930s, right? Has these really sharply flared shoulders, and it has a kind of high velvet asymmetrical neckline, and that velvet asymmetrical panel continues down the center front of the coat. And then it also has these wide turn back cuffs of velvet. And the only embellishment on this entire black coat is this kind of square metal button right at the collarbone, like closing the collar, and it is enameled in the most amazing emerald green. And that really this coat is all about silhouette and construction. And I'm wearing this as a dress because the length of it is very important because of what I'm pairing with my ensemble.
Okay.
Are you ready for this?
Yes.
So you need to be able to see my legs in this ensemble because I'm pairing it with a pair of stockings circa 1900, which are in the collection of the Victorian Albert Museum in London. And the museum describes them as thus, quote, a pair of black knitted stockings embroidered with green sequins and green and gold beads, decorated with a winding silver snake that curls twice around the lower leg and whose head rests on the forepart of the foot. So we gotta keep the dress simple because all the drama is in the stocking. Okay.
You want me to go on?
Or yeah, keep going. Fully paint the picture
full
of the outfit.
Full ensemble.
Okay, full ensemble. And the next bit is purely because this is an exercise in fantasy dressing. Obviously, we'll never really wear these things. So I'm going to be showcasing these amazing pieces of fashion history from 1900 by pairing them with Martin Margiela's 2009 glass slippers. And one of these glass slippers was part of the museum at FIT's True Obsession show a few years ago. And these are really fantasy because they are actually glass. They're not meant to be worn. They're more of an art object. But you could actually buy them at the time when they were available. They were like $1,300 per shoe. So I think they're kind of more meant to sit on your shelf or be bookends or something like that. But in my mind, hey, we're going to go there. All right. But the jewelry, this is where some extravagance comes in. It still has to be simple. So I'm only going to be wearing a watch and some earrings. They are, however, by Cartier. And by what selection, Kath, believe it or not, has something to do, as I started looking into the history of this watch, has something to do directly linking it to the work of Georges Barbier.
Yes.
Do you want to tell people, our listeners, who Georges Barbier was, in case they do not know?
Georges Barbier is one of the most important fashion illustrators in history. He is one of the fathers, so-called fathers, of modern fashion illustration at the dawn of the 20th century. So really moving fashion illustration beyond the kind of line-for-line renderings that were meant to sell an exact rendering of a dress. And he brought really the art into fashion illustration, the storytelling. And he happened to work for Cartier, as I'm sure you're about to share with our listeners.
Yeah, yes, yes. Of course, also, we have researched Barbier extensively because we covered him in our book, Fashion and the Art of Pochoir, and you'll see many Barbier illustrations in that. But both my watch and the earrings that I'm going to wear are from Cartier's ongoing Panthère, or Panther, collection, which, according to Cartier's own history, this now legendary Panthère collection originated in 1914 when Louis Cartier commissioned Georges Barbier to create this illustration of a very fashionable lady, all decked out in jewels, and she was posing with a panther. And this was supposed to be used as an invitation for a jewelry exhibition, which was likely where Cartier's first panther creation debuted in the form of this watch. And it is an extravagant, I would call it like early Art Deco specimen. It's rendered in onyx and diamonds that are creating like these speckledy spots. This watch is amazing. We'll obviously post images of it. It's swoon worthy. So I'm going to be wearing this on my wrist. And then we're going to fast forward about 44 years. And I'm going to be pairing this watch, this original Panthère watch, with a pair of Panthère head earrings that are made from diamonds, emeralds, and sapphires. So these spectacular creations, these little works of art, these earrings were actually commissioned by Prince Saruddin Aga Khan in 1958. Most likely for his new bride, his first wife, the fashion model and socialite Mina Dyer, who he would go on to shower with Cartier creations for the rest of their relatively short 5-year-long marriage. But we know that he commissioned many Cartier pieces. We know he commissioned these earrings. It was a few months after their wedding, so I'm definitely saying it's probably for her. So that's it. That's my look.
That's it. Yeah. And dress listeners, I think April and I have to make reels of these fashion fantasy outfits. So expect those later this week. And speaking of extravagant jewelry and fantasy fashion, I'm just going to say that my outfit is valued at about $33 million, give or take.
You really went all out this year, Cass. Please tell us all about it. We were all waiting with bated breath.
So you will remember, dress listeners, from our very recent fashion history now, that a diamond necklace associated with the affair of the diamond necklace scandal that irreparably stained Queen Marie Antoinette's reputation in the latter half of the 18th century, a necklace that is believed to have been comprised of the diamonds that were a part of that necklace, just sold at Sotheby's for a whopping $4.5 million. And in that episode, we talked about how it was purchased anonymously. But I do think it's time to share with you all Dress listeners that the identity of that anonymous buyer was me.
Fantastic. Can't wait to see it and borrow it next time we see each other.
So that is what jewelry I will be wearing. And that jewelry, as you might remember, it's a choker style necklace. It has two pronounced diamond tassels, and it's comprised of 300 carats of 500 diamonds. So just a little something for the holidays. So in celebration of our recently announced course on the Golden Age of Haute Couture, I thought it only fitting that I wear one of the creations from this 1950s Golden Age of Design by one of the supreme fashion artists of that period, who, while not technically an haute couturier, very much worked within the haute couture tradition with the made-to-order model, the same level of skill and detail, an American designer.
Norman Norell.
Based in Chicago.
Oh, obviously, it's Charles James.
Well, I guess based in New York, from Chicago, worked in both places.
Both, a little bit of both.
Yes. I will be wearing Charles James's green silk satin strapless ball gown from 1954. It's currently in the collection of the Met Museum. They've let me borrow it for this party. Wearing it now as we record. And as the object information tells us, quote, James designed this dramatic gown a year after his four-leaf clover ball gown, which is the huge ball gown. And as the Met caption describes it, this was an engineering and sculptural masterpiece that featured an undulating four-lobed skirt flounce. There, they described it much better than I just attempted to. And in this dress, he has spiraled an equally sculptural flounce around the body from upper hip to hem, not unlike the spiraling skirt of the brown taffeta cocktail dress. So he achieved a structure whose form changes from every vantage point. Again, we will post pictures because it's such a stunning, beautifully stunning dress, but also just this feat of craftsmanship and construction. It's this vibrant green. It's perfect for the holiday spirit. And because it is for the holiday and for Christmas, it was also only fitting that I pair it with red shoes. Which is where we get.
I was hoping you were going to say that.
Which is where we get to the $33 million outfit. Do you know where I'm going with this, April?
I do, because of Wicked. You're going to borrow the Dorothy shoes from the Wizard of Oz.
Nice. I actually purchased them this past weekend from Heritage Auctions. They were just $28 million. Buyer's premium, I think, brought it up to $32 million. But yes, another pair of Dorothy's ruby red slippers that were actually worn by actress Judy Garland, of course, in the 1939 film Wizard of Oz. And a number of these have come up for auction over the years. Some of them weren't necessarily worn, or they were worn by her, or they were worn for promotional purposes. I read an article with the BBC, and they said, quote, the auctioneers called the slippers the holy grail of Hollywood memorabilia, and said their selling price made them the most valuable movie memorabilia ever sold at auction.
Yeah.
And
we had talked about these slippers before on the podcast.
Exactly.
In detail, like a little bit of a history of them.
Yeah. I was going to say, we've now at this point done multiple episodes on Wizard of Oz. We did just, of course, recently interviewed Paul Tazewell, the costume designer for Wicked. But we also did an episode on the Wiz Broadway show in 1974. And then we talked about Dorothy's legendary red ruby slippers on our two-part episode on the movie's costume designer, Adrian, costume designer turned fashion designer. And as many of you probably have noticed in Wicked, and there's been a lot of comment about this because Nessa Rose's slippers are silver in the film, the slippers originally were silver in the Frank Baum books from 1900, but turned red in the 1939 film so as to show up better in Technicolor on the big screen. So now they will be on my feet underneath this beautiful green dress topped with my Marie Antoinette's
necklace.
Yeah.
Sounds spectacular.
What will you be doing with your hair, just out of curiosity?
My hair will just be swept up in a low bun, I think, so as to best show off
casually.
The jewels. Yes.
The jewels. What
about you?
Yeah, I think I would probably have mine up high on my head in like a messy fashion, just because of that high collar of the coat. You need to show your jawline, and you need to show the neckline and the silhouette. No hair on the shoulders, because the shoulders of that silhouette are so spectacular. So,
yeah.
Yes. Okay. Firstly, we both got the green note. So I have the emerald button and all the green on my tights and all over in my jewelry. This actually pulls through, and I did not mean it to, into one of the dishes, one of the two dishes that I will be bringing to the party. Like to hear about it.
Yes. And actually, it also pulls through to mine. So you go first.
Okay, fantastic. Have you ever heard of goblin sandwiches?
I have not.
Okay. I am a big fan of following vintage cookbooks, and all of those Instagram accounts have all the vintage recipes in them, especially the ones from the 1970s that are completely crazy. And goblin sandwiches, as a gift to you, our listeners, I'm going to share with you exactly how you prepare goblin sandwiches. First, you're going to begin by removing the shells from about 1 cup of Brazil nuts. You're going to toast them in a quote-unquote moderate oven, whatever that means, for about 15 minutes. You're going to let them cool. You're going to crush them with a rolling pin. And then with these crushed Brazil nuts, you're going to mix 1 can of deviled ham and the pulp of an avocado pear, as the recipe calls for. I wasn't exactly sure what an avocado pear was. Is it an avocado? Is it a pear? Is it some sort of like frankenfruit that I was not aware of? Yeah. No, it's just an avocado. I think it's like a term that they used to use in the past. So we have Brazil nuts, can of deviled ham, avocado. Next, we're going to season this deviled ham and avocado nut mixture heavily, as the recipe says, with Worcestershire sauce. But wait, it gets better. This is not a dip. Actually, this is a filling, because we are now going to have to cut in half 18, quote, tested quality donuts and spread half of the filling onto half of the donut and cover with the second half of the donut.
Oh, wow.
I'm assuming that these are glazed donuts, too. In the back of my mind, they are. I don't know what's going on here, but I'm bringing it to the party and we're going to find out.
I am just bringing one dish, and actually, technically, it's not a dish. It is a punch. It's called the Mod House Punch, and it comes to us thanks to the December 16th, 1966 issue of Life magazine, and it's actually from an ad for Sprite. So mix up a merry old bowl with tart-tingling Sprite. Add just the right note to the festivities. Sprite, exuberant, switched on, noisy, nothing you've heard before. Look for 5 easy-to-mix holiday punch recipes free in cartons of Sprite. So tart and tingling, we just couldn't keep it quiet.
Wow. What are the other ingredients in this punch?
So it says, here's a punch that comes in loud and clear. And the ingredients are 1 6-ounce packaged lime-flavored gelatin, 2 cups hot water, 1/2 to 1 cup bottled lime juice, 2 12-ounce cans of frozen concentrate for limeade, 9 10-ounce bottles of Sprite, 1 teaspoon almond extract. Then you dissolve the gelatin in the hot water. You stir in frozen concentrate for limeade, add lime juice, and then you pour it into a bowl over cracked ice and add your Sprite. And if you like a little more spirit.
Sound that bad.
I didn't notice this before. If you like a little more spirit, add 1/5 of vodka. There are so many alcohol ads in Life magazine, by the way. I actually intentionally didn't do an alcoholic beverage. So that's really funny that's in there. But I thought it was really interesting that they're promoting Sprite in this way, because we're so familiar with Sprite today. But it was a really recent product to the U.S. in 1966. It was actually created in West Germany in 1959 and introduced to the U.S. market in 1961. So just 5 years previous. And it was intended as a competitor to 7-Up. So there's your little Sprite fashion history lesson with my Mod House Punch dish.
Mod House Punch. I also am bringing a punch, if I may. Okay, it's very simple. Anyone can do this. It is, I would say, this is more of a savory option as compared to your Mod House Punch. First of all, 1 cup chilled ginger ale. You're going to mix that with 2 tablespoons of lemon juice. And then you're going to add 2 cans of condensed beef broth and serve it over ice. You guys just see the look on Cassidy's face right now. You can't see. I don't think I've ever seen you look like that.
Please forgive. Yeah, we're both right. Yeah, there's gelatin in mine and beef broth in yours. Who knew that meat punches was such a thing? No, thank you.
And now everyone has officially exited our party. No one wants to stay.
Please do dress, listeners, because it's just getting started. Oh, we yes. are about to enter our gift-giving part of the party, which is our mm-hmm. favorite, where April mm-hmm. and I try to one-up each other, I guess I would say we do. We try to find the most outrageous or fun gifts in the history of fashion. Sometimes I, at least, repeat gifts that I've already given you. I tried really hard not to do that this year. But before we
re-gifter.
But before we get into our gift-giving section of the podcast, you have a story, April, you want to share with us about a particularly fun gift-giving decade-long history tradition from one particular family?
Yes. So while I was just like poking about on the internet and thinking about like the history of strange gifts that had been given between friends and family, et cetera, I ran across this story, and there's little bits of it that appear for decades. There's articles in the Chicago Tribune. There's some things in the Associated Press. There's things in the New York Times. But ultimately, I found this article from the Florida Times Union from 2014, and it's entitled Fact Check, Back and Forth Went the Moleskin Pants for 25 Years. So you guys, this has to be one of the craziest stories I've heard. Especially pertaining to fashion, but I had to distill this down for you. So essentially, there in 1964, this gentleman named Larry Kunkel, his mom gave him a pair of moleskin pants for Christmas. And he wore them a couple times, but he didn't like them because he lived in a really cold climate and they would get very stiff. So the next year, as a joke, he wrapped them up and sent them to his brother-in-law, whose name is Roy Collette. And cut forward, these two brother-in-laws for the next 25 years centered this pair of pants at their like ongoing practical jokes on each other every single Christmas, re-gifting them to each other back and forth. And it became ridiculous. So it wasn't just that they were sending them back and forth. They were like, they started this contest where they would disguise or package these pants in a certain way, and the other one had to get it out in order to re-gift them the following year. And as the years go on, it gets more and more bizarre. So, Cass, do you maybe want to read a couple of these scenarios of what they were doing to each other?
Yeah, so the article says that this kind of back and forth went routinely for a couple years until one year, Collette decided to twist the pants tightly and stuff them into a 3-foot-long, 1-inch-wide pipe. And then this is when the game began. And as April said, they continuously devised these more and more outrageous ways to wrap and gift these pants. Collette told the United Press International 1985 that their wrapping efforts had to be morally, legally, and spiritually correct. Plus, they agreed not to spend any money. Packaging expenses had to be low. And after a while, the wrapping was usually donated. In addition, the men decided if opening the packaging damaged the pants, the contest would end. So you can pick up from there, April.
Yeah. So this just goes off the rails completely. Like a few years in, Kunkel had the pants mounted inside an insulated window that had a 20-year guarantee and then shipped them back to Collette. Collette then apparently broke the glass of the window, got the pants out, stuffed them into a 5-inch coffee can. He soldered that shut and then put that soldered shut can in a 5-gallon container filled with concrete and reinforcing rods and then spin it back.
And then a 225-pound homemade steel ashtray made from 8-inch casings and etched with Collette's name was Kunkel's next extravaganza, and Collette had trouble retrieving the pants, but he was able to find them without burning them with a cutting torch.
Okay, now this has been going on so long, they're starting to get family members and even each other's coworkers involved in this whole shenanigans. The article goes on to say Collette was not to be outdone. He found a 600-pound safe and hauled it to Viracon Inc., in Owatonna, Minnesota, where the shipping department redecorated it with red and green stripes, put the pants inside, they welded the safe shut, and then the safe was shipped to Kunkel, who was the plant manager for Viracon's office in Illinois. So basically, Collette got the Minnesota office of his brother-in-law's company to in on this whole thing.
Oh, my gosh. And then other efforts to wrap the pants, according to Snopes.com, was a green 3-foot cube that was once a 1974 Gremlin. What's a Gremlin?
It's a car that does not exist anymore.
Note attached to the 2,000-pound scrunch car advised Colette that the pants were inside glove compartment. How did they get that to him?
Exactly. I have a feeling that both of these gentlemen worked in industrial...
Industries, manufacturing,
it seems. Yeah. Fast forward to 1982. Kunkel had to retrieve the pants from a tire 8 feet high and 2 feet wide, filled with 6,000 pounds of concrete. And on the outside, Colette had written, "Have a good year," as in the tire firms.
In 1983, the pants came back to Colette in a 17.5-foot red rocket ship filled with concrete weighing 6 tons. And inside the rocket were 15 concrete-filled canisters, one of which contained the pants.
Colette's answer back then for the rocket ship was a 4-ton Rubik's Cube. Obviously, the height of the Rubik's Cube, trend. In 1985, and the cube was made of concrete and covered with lumber.
Kunkel then filled a station wagon with 170 steel generators all welded together. Because the pants had to be retrieved undamaged, Colette had to carefully take apart each component.
However, by 1989, remember, one of the caveats is this, the pants have to be unharmed, right? 1989, this all came to a screeching halt because Colette wanted to put the pants in 10,000 pounds of broken glass that was going to be deposited on Kunkel's front yard. The pants were shipped to a friend in Tennessee who managed a glass manufacturing company. And while the molten glass was being poured over an insulated container that held the pants, a chunk of that container fractured and transformed the pants apparently into a pile of ashes, according to Snopes.com. And what happened next, Cass?
The ashes were put into a brass urn and delivered to Kunkel with the epitaph, "Sorry, old man, here lies the pants. An attempt to cast the pants in glass brought about the demise of the pants at last."
And the article goes on to say, and it wraps up saying, Kunkel now keeps the urn with the ashes of the pants on his fireplace mantle. So if you guys think that our fantasy fashion history gift exchange is ridiculous, this actually happened. And Cass, we should also probably say that you didn't actually buy the Marie Antoinette necklace, just in case somebody thought that you were being serious about this. We did not purchase any of these things. This is just our little game.
Oh my gosh, that's hilarious. Yeah, hopefully we've made that very clear. But in my world, I did purchase that. So let's just leave it at that. Okay, dress listeners, we are going to get to our promised gift exchange when we return from a brief sponsor break. Dress listeners, holiday shopping season tis upon us, and Rakuten is the best way to save lots of money this holiday season. Why? That's because you can stack holiday sales and deals on top of Rakuten's cashback program to maximize your savings at 3,500 stores.
How does it work? Well, your favorite stores pay Rakuten to send them shoppers, and Rakuten passes some of that money directly onto their members via cashback, by PayPal, or a check.
And this holiday season, cashback rates will be the highest of the year, up to 15% depending on the store. And we are talking across every single category, including fashion, beauty, electronics, home essentials, travel, and dining.
As a pet owner, I especially love the fact that I can get cash back at PetSmart and Chewy when I shop them via Rakuten. Membership is free and it's easy to sign up. Join the 17 million members who are already saving. Start all of your holiday shopping at Rakuten.com or download the Rakuten app to start saving today. Your cash back really adds up. Us ladies have all been there. Feeling a smidge off the days before your cycle is something that we have all experienced at one point or another. For some of us, it's occasional. For others, it's a monthly battle.
Which is why Happy Mammoth has created Estro Control, a capsule containing science-backed herbal extracts that help support hormonal health, especially in women who suffer from PMS.
The way Estro Control eases PMS is quite interesting. The ingredients help support the liver, and that's where our hormones get processed, especially estrogen. So when the estrogen isn't processed well in the liver, this can potentially trigger PMS.
Estrogen Control is made specifically for women who are premenopausal, so it's perfect for women that haven't entered menopause yet. In fact, it's amazing for perimenopause, when hormones start to fluctuate and PMS can hit hard.
For a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code DRESSED at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code DRESSED for 15% off today.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Welcome back, dress listeners. We are now, of course, launching into our long-awaited portion of our gift exchange. Cass, can I give you your gift first? Would you like to receive the first gift?
Yes. Okay. I'm so excited.
So I'm going this year in chronological order just because that seems to make sense. And this item, I actually bookmark things as I see them all year long. Gift exchange. Months ago, I saved this post by the Instagram account at the Fashionable Exhibit. I don't even know who runs this account. It's a fabulous account. So please take it as a recommendation from us. And I even asked around in the New York fashion historian community, hey guys, who runs this account? Because it seems like all of us follow them. We don't know who you are. So if you're out there, please identify yourself so we can give you props for all of your amazing work. But back in February, this account posted a work, or I should say works, which were on view at the Ashmolean Museum in Oxford. And these were actually on loan to this exhibition called Color Revolution, Victorian Art, Fashion, and Design. And some of our listeners will recall that we did an episode earlier this year in early 2024 called Fashion Fads from History, Live On or Leave It to the Past. And in this episode, one of the things that we spoke about was living jewelry and how in the late 19th and early 20th century, there was this fad of wearing live chameleons and even live beetles as brooches.
Yes.
Cass, I would never dare offer you a live animal as a gift for jewelry, but your first gift is a little bit tangential to this.
Okay.
It is a paglero, which is the French word for set, of a necklace, earrings, and tiara, which are in the collection of the British Museum. And I just want to say, before I even delved into the history of this particular object, I had already picked it out as one of your gifts, so that this whole history part of it came after the fact. But I want to describe it first.
Okay.
The set dates to 1884, and the catalog entry describes it as, quote, a paglero of a tiara, necklace and earrings formed of dried South American weevils with iridescent green wing cases, mounted in gold with Egyptian taste with lotus motifs. On the necklace and earrings, the lotuses are interspersed with tiny gold rods ending in black enamel beads. So this is not iridescent beetle jewelry. It's iridescent weevil jewelry. And this is even more rare in the history of jewelry. And these weevils were native to Brazil, which was a former Portuguese colony. Okay, this is where the history bit comes in. So
weevils are bugs, by the way.
Yeah, they look a lot like beetles. Or these. Well, again, we will post images of these objects. So what I found out once I figured out that it actually belonged to the British Museum and started poking around on that end, they had this incredible history of this set. So this set once belonged to Lady Granville, and her husband was the second Earl of Granville, and he was the British Foreign Secretary during like the 1870s and the 1880s. So how this necklace came into being was a result of the Earl of Granville negotiating a trade treaty with the ambassador of Portugal. And what this trade treaty had to do with was it had to do with the Congo River and the British rights to navigate and access the Congo River for reasons of trade. And once this whole deal was all complete, the Portuguese ambassador, apparently was a tradition there, he wanted to give a gift of jewelry to Lady Granville. But the Earl of Granville thought that this might be seen as a bribe of sorts. So he said no to the jewelry, but he said yes to the weevils. So these very, very rare Brazilian weevils were sent to them in the UK, and the Earl of Granville paid for them to be turned into this powder, the jewelry set. And he selected these London-based jewelers, Phillips Brothers and Sons, in 1884. So what's really interesting is, I could go on for another 15 minutes about this, but this jewelry, and we always talk about this on the show, how you cannot disconnect fashion from trade and politics, but this set of jewelry really at its epicenter is a story about colonization and trade. And also when this deal between Portugal and the British Empire happened, it also dictated who could and could not access these inner regions of Africa via the Congo River. And this set of jewelry is actually the manifestation and evidence of that deal.
Wow. That is super fascinating. And that is not
and
at all
where
I
now.
Thought. Thank you. I suppose I can take off my $4.5 million diamond necklace and put this on because it does match my dress.
Yeah. Yeah. You have two looks.
Yeah.
Two looks.
So this year, all of my gifts for you are actually going to be accompanied by a rhyme.
Ooh,
and that is thanks to an article in Ladies' Home Journal from December 1920, which says that an appropriate bit of verse on a card that accompanies a Christmas gift will add a touch of originality that will make even the simplest present more valuable in the eye of the recipient. So you'll have to tell me if you think that's true.
Okay.
So my first rhyme is X is for Xmas, Christmas. Best day of the year. M is for merriment, ringing so clear. A is for all that is jolly and pleasant. S is for Santa, who brings you this present.
Did you write these rhymes?
No. These are all from 1920s Ladies' Home Journal. Yeah.
Well,
so last year, I'm sure you remember, I gifted you 18th century beauty spots. And this year for your face, and this year I am gifting you a beaded patch box to put them in.
Oh, fantastic. I'm thrilled.
And this is a gift also coming to us thanks to a recent social media post on Instagram by Cora Ginsburg, which, as you know, April, is a purveyor of fine and rare fashion and textiles. They've actually been around since 1949. In grad school, I'm sure you went there too. In grad school,
Absolutely.
That was one of my most memorable visits. We spent the afternoon at their New York office in their collection, and they just have the most exceptional museum quality pieces that are just so special. You really can't get them anywhere else. So,
and they do such a great job of researching them.
Yes,
too.
Exactly.
Many a graduate student fashion historian has interned at Cora Ginsburg.
Yes. So follow them immediately just for great fashion and textile and dress history content. But they are currently doing a 12 days of Christmas advent calendar on their Instagram. And this patch box that I'm gifting you was on day one. It is a rare beadwork patch box from the 1770s and 80s. And it's adorned with this charming beaded portrait of a fashionable young woman. She has these blonde curls and then this black hat adorned with flowers. And as the Instagram post reads, for day one of the 12 days, we present a rare beadwork patch box from the 1770s or 80s. What's a patch box? This was a tiny container that held faux beauty marks or patches worn on the face. Patches were sometimes used to cover blemishes or skin problems, but they were also worn to convey romantic messages or even political leanings all across Europe and Latin America. Maybe we should do an episode on that. They could be out of cut paper or gummed silk, which I find so charming. Mm-hmm. And it continues, the boxes that held patches were made using a variety of materials, including metal, porcelain, and ivory. Beadwork versions like this one were especially popular in France. And this is the part I love most about this, April. So they describe the box. It's the top of the box features a lady, possibly in the costume of a shepherdess. And the sides feature an amorous inscription, which I just think is so sweet, which suggests it could have been a gift to a beloved. The inscription may read as follows, and excuse my French, I will translate it. Je sais tu et je ne dis rien, et le temps presse, je dis le bien. I know all and I say nothing, and the tenderness, I speak of it well. That's so sweet.
I love it. Can't wait to put all my patches in it. Also, too, fun fact, sometimes I made patches out of like leather. And particularly, as I just referenced, these moleskin pants, they made them out of moleskin, too, which is why those are called moles that we have on our face.
Oh, fun fact. Yeah, maybe mm-hmm. put that on the list for season 8. I think that could be a really mm-hmm. fascinating
little
episode.
Fashion history mystery type thing.
Yeah.
All right. Apparently, we're keeping annual traditions going this year because your next gift has now also become an annual tradition. Dress listeners, if you listen to the show regularly, you know that Cassidy loves miniature things. So much so that she actually just sent me a text message, I don't know, like 2-3 days ago. Oh, no, it was an Instagram post. And it was like someone's post about these tiny little miniature books. And she was like, I think I might have to start collecting miniature books.
No, I am. Like, I was on the internet researching. And it's not even just a miniature book. These were like micro miniature books, guys. Less than a quarter of an inch in width. And then maybe an inch long.
Yeah.
Okay, I digress.
But they actually have pages.
Yes, and they're illustrated.
It's actually a book. Yeah. Okay. So now annually, one of your gifts has to be a miniature something. Last year, they were miniature sewing kits and little linen trousseaus that were created for dollhouses. Depending on what year said dollhouses were from, perhaps they might have needed also one of this year's gifts as well, which is a miniature corset.
Oh.
And I discovered this miniature corset in the Underpinning Museum's collection. It is an online museum which features historic undergarments. We have talked about the Underpinnings Museum on the show before. It is a project of the lingerie designer Karolina Lakowska. And according to the catalog entry on the Underpinning Museum, and we just want to say this is an online museum. A lot of it is Carolina's own collection, but the museum only exists online. You can't go to it physically. But the catalog entry for this reads, the garment is crafted from sturdy cotton coutille and is decorated with a contrasting red silk fur and broderie anglaise machine embroidered trims at the neckline and hip edges. And if for any of you who are wondering what is silk fur, it's actually silk. It's not fur, but they've rubbed the edges and made it fuzzy, if that makes any sense. They've teased out some of the strings to make it fuzzy. The entry goes on. The metal busk fastening is stamped DB, likely an abbreviation of the original brand's name. The garment is structured with a mix of baleen, which is whale bone, and flat steel bones. Metal eyelets at the center back are laced with a contrasting red cotton lacing. Hand-stitched flossing embroidery is applied to a number of the bone channels, a decorative method of securing the bones in place and reducing the wear and tear. We don't know exactly the size on this because it's not given, but the most interesting part about this is that it is thought to have been a salesman's sample, and it definitely dates to like the 1880s. Because we know this because of the silhouette. So if this traveling salesman was traveling around trying to sell his wares in the 1880s, it might have been easier for him to carry miniature versions of his corsets than a whole collection of full-size corsets. So,
and I Googled this immediately. And I'm looking at it.
Miniature collection.
Yes. And I'm looking it up because it's fantastic. And there is actually a tape measure next to it. It's 10 inches high.
Oh, 10 inches. Okay, great. Why did I not notice that?
Yeah. Oh, it's okay. It's absolutely lovely. And also reminds me of an episode I am working on, at least one of probably multiple episodes for season 8, which is on corset myth busting. Because I recently posted a reel on Instagram that's gotten a lot of attention. And there is so much misinformation being spread in the comments. It's wild to me. I was not expecting it. And so this is perfectly on theme with where my mind's been lately, because I've just been researching all these things about what people think they know about corsets, including myself. So expect that coming your way in season 8, Dress Listeners. And actually, April, as you anticipated, we are at the end of part one of this episode because we each have 4 more gifts to give to each other. So this gift-giving episode is the gift that keeps giving to you, Dress Listeners. So this
will part two.
Not be our last episode of season 7, but close. So coming your way Friday, we will bring you part 2, which will be our conclusion of season 7 of Dressed. But in the meantime, head on over to dressedhistory.com and sign up for our new class. We're so excited. Do you want to talk a little bit more about it?
Yeah. So this class is actually going to be a two-parter. Our other classes that we have offered have been a four-parter. This is just going to be a two-parter, which is going to be a deep dive into the period of the 1950s, specifically in haute couture. We're not going to be talking about ready-to-wear per se. It may filter in here and there in the context of haute couture, but we're really going to get into what is haute couture? What does that even mean? What was the structure of a couture house? You're going to get to meet not only the designers, but a lot of these other influential people like fashion editors, models, some of the style icons of the day. And those sessions will be about an hour and a half long. 60 minutes of that will be the lecture portion. And then we have allotted 30 minutes for questions and answers and just general socializing with whoever would like to join our class.
Yeah. And this is something a topic April and I have long researched. So we thought it'd be fun to bring to you. It's also just going to be an incredibly gorgeous class.
Gorgeous.
It's going to be so, so beautiful. So many images coming your way. So many stories from behind the scenes of this period. And we're hoping too that you're going to come away learning a lot about things that you maybe thought you knew but didn't, right? I think one of the main myth-busting things that will happen, or not necessarily myth-busting things, but the legend of Christian Dior, right? There's all of these things we think we know of Dior and the new look, but we're going to turn that not necessarily on its head, but look at it from a 360 angle, heading into even the 1930s to look at the development of this silhouette into this golden age. So we're really excited. We're co-teaching it because it's fun. And it's going to be on February 2nd and February 9th of next year, which is also the week that we will be launching season 8. So much dress coming your way in the new year.
And if you want more dressed this spring, we're going to be doing New York City day tours. And right now, those are early April. And again, just like we did it last year when we did these day tours, it's going to be a 3-day affair, but it's a mix and match affair. So you can come one day, you can come 2 days, you can come all 3 days, you could come day one and day three. You can do whatever you want, friends. These are being packaged and sold by the day. And as we are just now cementing the final details with all of the visits that we're going to be going to, we haven't quite put that up for registration yet, but that will probably happen in the next week, I would say. Yes?
Yeah,
yes?
For sure. You can expect information coming your way very shortly. And just to give you an idea of what we're doing, we'll be in the Garment District, heading to some of the Garment District's oldest staples. And
the ateliers are actually letting us in to the factories to see what they're doing.
And you'll meet those owners, and it's such a great day. And then heading up to see the Real Clothes, Real Lives exhibition at the New York Historical Society. So we're very much looking forward to that. We did a whole episode with the curators, and one of those curators is going to be joining us for an in-person tour. We're going to spend an entire day at the Met doing fashion-themed tours throughout that collection with also some special guests that we're not announcing yet, but very excited for that day.
Let's just say this special guest might have been on the podcast.
Yes. And specializing in ancient fashion of a specific order. And then we'll spend an entire day at FIT. That was one of our fun. I mean, all of these days were fun last year, but spending a day at FIT looking at their new exhibition and then going behind the scenes to special collections visits and actually getting to handle some of their study collection in person. So
yes,
such a special time. We're super excited to see you in New York and also April in Paris.
Yeah. And now it's going to be late June.
Yes. We've moved on from May. Things were a little close, a little quick for us. We wanted to give everyone enough time to request off from work and to meet us in Paris, but we will be in Paris late June. You can definitely expect that trip to be announced in January of next year. So many of you are already on our wait list. If you want to join a wait list for New York, or it's not a wait list, but a first to know list for New York day tours, as well as for the Paris tours, send us an email at hello@dressedhistory.com.
I've been adding you diligently away as you send us your requests.
And dressedhistory.com is, of course, where you can find all of our latest information on our classes. You can find information about how to sign up for April's Met Tours.
Oh my gosh, Met Tours are alive and well after I've come back from Paris. Join me for a 90-minute tour of the Met's permanent collection, where we look at about 10 of the Met's most fashionable masterpieces through the lens of fashion. So yeah, these are super fun. Head over to dressedhistory.com to find availability on Tuesday mornings and Friday evenings.
And dress listeners, if you want holiday gift ideas, you can, as mentioned at the top of the episode, dress listeners, if you're looking for holiday gift ideas for yourself or the fashion history lovers in your life, You can gift them registration for our course. You can gift them one of April's mentors. And you can also head to our bookshop at bookshop.org to check out over 150 of our favorite fashion and fashion history titles. And there is a link to all of this that we've talked about in our show notes, which is where you can also find a link to sign up to the ad-free version of the show for just $3 a month. I think we covered it all, April.
Yeah, for sure. I think that does it for us today, dress listeners. May you ponder what is your fashion history fantasy next time you get dressed. Remember, we love hearing from you, so you can always write to us at hello@dressedhistory.com. More dressed and more gift exchanges coming your way on Friday. Dress, the History of Fashion, is a production of Dress Media.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.